Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. This is Mormon Stories. I'm John DeLynn. Today I have with me someone who I've been hoping to interview for a long time now, and someone who I think has done an incredible amount of good to help people in their struggles within this Mormon dilemma that many of us face. And his name is Brian Johnston. Brian, welcome to Mormon Stories Podcast.
Oh, hey, John. Thanks.
Now, Brian has been interviewed on the Mormon Expression Podcast a few times. He's appeared with me even once or twice. And you're going to hear some overlap if you are a Mormon Expression listener with this podcast. But don't let that dismay you. We're going to go into a lot more depth, and I hardly recommend you go listen to those episodes on Mormon Expression Podcast if you haven't yet. But there are a few reasons why I've been wanting to interview Brian for a long, long time. The first is that just like we've interviewed people on Mormon Stories who have struggled with their faith, and even some have chosen to leave the church, I have a commitment and a goal to make sure that we cover all sides of the spectrum in terms of the Mormon experience. And probably the situation that I'm personally most interested in is people who have been through a crisis of faith, people who know all the challenging intellectual and historical problems with the church, and maybe you could even argue have every possible excuse or reason to want to leave the church, but who instead remain believers in some sense and who decide that they want to stay. And Brian is one of those people. He's an active member of the church. He loves the church, and he's found a way to remain in a way that brings him a lot of joy and satisfaction. So that's the first reason I wanted to bring Brian on. Second, Brian is a co-founder of the website StayLDS.com. And currently the CEO of the website. He runs it, he manages it, and he's the main person at StayLDS whose primary mission is not to convince people to stay in the church. That is absolutely not the core mission of StayLDS, but instead the purpose of StayLDS is for those people who decide that they either need or want to stay in the church to provide them support, to help them in that decision. And Brian is like a missionary to these people every day, going up to the forum at StayLDS.com and helping people navigate these tricky waters. And then finally, the last reason why I've really wanted to interview Brian is because he is himself in a mixed faith marriage. His wife no longer attends church. She's no longer a believer. And not only has he, you know, is he in the thick of navigating how to manage that relationship and make it be as positive as possible for both he and his wife and their six children. But also, Brian has spent a lot of time on Faces East. Is it .com or .org?
It's a .org.
FacesEast.org, which is a website dedicated to supporting mixed faith marriages. So, Brian, how's that for an introduction?
Wow. Who is that guy?
That is you. Yeah. That is you. So with that, Brian, let's begin as I always begin, and let's dive deep into your story.
Okay. Where do we start? Like, do a chronological?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. I have, I grew up in a traditional Orthodox Mormon family. My father was a convert when he was a young adult. My mother has been a member of the church all her life. Grew up, they were wonderful parents, active in the church. My father was a bishop for a number of years. They currently are temple workers and have done service missions and stuff like that. Wonderful parents, great examples to me. I'm the oldest of eight children, and by the way, we always lived outside of, you know, the whatever you want to call it, the Mormon corridor. Except for 1 year that I spent at BYU, I've always lived outside of that area in the so-called mission field.
Don't you love that term?
Yeah. But, you know, I think I really enjoyed that aspect. It fit in well with my personality because, you know, there wasn't a lot of members of the church, and, you know, it made me have to always just think about what it means to, you know, what does it mean to be a Mormon? Because I'm always somebody who's different as opposed to just fitting in. And I guess to me, that is kind of like a theme that has permeated a lot of my life experience growing up and also as an adult. I think personality wise, I guess just to tell a story of when I was young, I was a young man about 12 years old. And this was kind of one of those key events in my life that I think where I made a big change, a transformation. And actually, I think that that's what life is a lot about. Like the meaning of life is kind of this process of transformation on a personal level. But anyways, I've always throughout my life kind of felt like I was on the sidelines or an outsider. And I guess I've grown to be very comfortable with that, and maybe that's why I've had an easier time staying. So I was around 12 years old and really just, you know, wanted to fit in and be cool with all the other kids, and went and bought, you know, this is, you got to picture this back in the 1980s, you know, went and got the coolest pair of parachute pants. I don't know if you remember that style.
I totally remember parachute pants.
Yeah, parachute pants. And I got this like black and white shirt that had sort of like odd cut sleeves, you know, totally cool clothes. And I was going to go down and, you know, to the church and go see a couple of girls that I liked and, you know, be totally Mr. Cool. And, you know, I was on my way there and, you know, I just started thinking about it. And I just realized that like this wasn't me trying to do all this artificial stuff to fit in, and you know the things that I always thought about and the things that I was passionate about. A lot of people, you know, if I would tell them about it, they would just like deer in the headlights and just go either not know what I'm talking about or think I'm crazy or something. But I just remember that moment in my life where I really decided and realized and was comfortable with the fact that I don't need to fit in order to be comfortable with myself, sort of thing. It's like I think I looked at myself in the mirror and I go, man, I look ridiculous. You know, it's just one of those kind of aha moments. So anyways, going forward after that, I have to say, as a young person, as a teenager, I struggled a lot. My family moved around, and I, you know, felt like I was ripped away from friends all the time, and I really was a pretty depressed and kind of angry person. I know people that meet me now can't believe this, but you know, when I was a teenager, I had funny colored hair and wore combat boots. I was in a goth band called Jesus Wept, and we played in clubs in D.C. and wrote our own music. And I was going to be, you know, a musician and an artist. But I was really just I was so sad. I just wanted to like I wish life would just go away. And
what were you sad about?
I felt like. Just the world was such a messed up place, and I kind of thinking back, like, you know, that was still in the era. My children don't even have any concept of this, but you know, it was an era where the Soviets were going to, you know, we were going to all die in a nuclear war, and that's like what was on TV. And you know, it was the era where, you know, there's a lot of, you know, a big rampant rise in drug use, and you know, the big 80s glitz of corporate America, and just everything seemed so out of kilter and out of whack. I just remember that, you know, me and my friends dwelt on that a lot. I don't know, perhaps I was even, you know, clinically depressed or something, but I got involved in a lot of, you know, alcohol and drugs, and like I said, this kind of this goth scene thing and playing this really angry music. And
do you have pictures? I want to see pictures.
Yeah. Actually, you know, I think we corresponded about this once. I was at BYU for a year, and I think you were there at the same exact time.
Yeah, 87. Chipman and...
Yeah, 87, 88, right in there. Heliman Halls. And I ended up gravitating towards hanging out with this one buddy who wasn't a member of the church. He was like one of my best friends there. And anyway, there's a couple other people that really, we all just stuck out like a sore thumb at BYU. I even had the dorm mom call me in and tell me I was like breaking standards because I had shaved my head or something like that, which I didn't quite get.
So there was a guy in my dorms named Pat, and he wore chains and I think he had earrings. You didn't know that guy, did you, in Chipman?
That sounds vaguely familiar. I don't think he was I don't remember if I hung out with him.
It totally unrelated to our audience. Sorry, audience.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. So there was, as a young person, I don't want to say I was suicidal because that's not how it was. I was just very angry and depressed, and the world seemed like a horrible place. And I know this is what's surprised everybody, but you know, I thought about that all the time, and I thought about what am I going to do in life. You know, I'd started a year of college, and I was just contemplating this one day. Because I knew I just had to figure something out. And we talked about this a little bit before. I hate sounding like a crazy person, but I had this a spiritual experience that I guess I would call like a vision. There wasn't any angels singing. There wasn't any beam of light coming down. But as I was pondering this, my mind just opened up and I could see it was like me standing on this brick wall, and I could jump off one side or I could jump off the other side, and going off in both directions I could see way down my life. And one was staying in a band and being this artist and you know, hanging out with my friends and going one path, and the other path was really different. And I could see, like, I couldn't really see all like specific details. It was more of a feeling of being dead. I'm trying to think of how to describe it, but it seemed like a good path, like a purposeful one. And I, you know, I'd be married and have a family and do good things in the world. But it was very different emotionally. And when I saw that, I thought to myself, I think I really want to give that a try. But the hard part was that the person I was at the time, who was all sad and depressed, it was a feeling like the way I processed it was that if I went down this other path that I saw that looked good, the person who I was would be no more. Does that make any sense? Like,
sure.
Almost like that person I was would die. Not really die, but that would be the end. And to everybody that knew me's great surprise, I announced that I was going on a mission. Everybody did like a double take. They're like, who's going on a mission? But that was a part of that path. And it was like stepping out and just taking a leap off the cliff and saying, I'm going to give this a try. You know, and part of this was, you know, I was raised Mormon. I was raised with these beliefs. I haven't really given this a try. I'm going to just do it. And I'm going to put my whole self into it and really give it a shot. There I was, you know, buying a suit, getting my hair cut, the whole nine yards. And I didn't even give a farewell speech because it just seemed so awkward. But I really threw myself into it, and I ended up going to a mission in Germany.
When were you in MTC?
Let's see. That would have been August, September of 1988.
So we were there at the same time.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so went to a mission in Germany.
So you had Pinniger. Pinniger was your MTC president.
Yeah.
Wasn't he awesome? Or did you not like him?
I liked him a lot. And I have a funny story to tell because, you know, think of like my life leading up to that, what I was involved in, and I've always kept like notebooks, and I write a lot. I write my ideas down, and I draw things. I just, you know, without even thinking, I brought my notebook because it was half full along with me as a missionary. And, you know, I start writing missionary stuff in it. But it was full of, like, lyrics to songs and really, like, dark drawings and all this stuff. And I made the mistake of leaving that, I think, in a class or in the cafeteria or something like that.
Oops.
Yeah. And I have to say, I know he was a wonderful man. I know he had a lot of love for everybody. But he had no idea what to do with me.
So I got turned into him, and then he called
you. Got turned into him. I got called down to his office. He's like, "What is this?" And he opens the notebook, and he's like paging through all this stuff. And I'm just sitting there like,
"Oh, that's a bummer."
Yeah, and this is the funny part of the story is, I mean, I told him, I said, "Look, you know, that was the life I led. I've decided to make this big change. I'm going to go on a mission for the church." And just for safety's sake, they decided to send me to like the MTC psychologist.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it was, you know, not to belabor the point, but you know, he gave me the rubber stamp. He said, "Look, this guy's just a creative individual. He seems healthy and all this stuff." But the funny thing is, I had to take like this big long psychological survey, and a bunch of the questions in it are like, "Do you believe that God speaks to you? Does he?" You know.
So was this like the MMPI? I'm in psychology. It was like 500 questions. Took an hour to fill it out.
It was really long.
That's
yeah.
crazy. They probably gave me the MMPI.
Yeah, so they're giving me this test, and I remember there was a big section. They kept asking questions about, like, you know, if I believe that God answers my prayers and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, if I answer yes, does that
make you crazy?
Does that mean I'm crazy? And if I answer no, does that mean that they're going to kick me out of the MTC?
That's funny.
Anyways, so I was fine. But like I said, you know, it's just they had no idea what to do with me, and that was fine. But yeah, all his talk about, no matter what, you can come talk to me. Well, I guess I found something that he didn't know what to do with.
Okay.
Well. So, yeah. So, went on a mission, and I went. The mission president I had in the Germany mission is notorious and infamous to this day. And I think, John, I listened to some of your stories and other podcasts, but you may have had a similar experience. But I was in one of those missions that was very numbers-driven.
Right.
And it was about the results. And I mean, this may not sound much for a South American mission, but in Germany, it was his goal. He was going to have 100 baptisms a month on a regular basis.
That's a lot. That's a ton.
In a European mission. And you know what? He got 99 his last month. I mean, we were doing that, but it was, you know, they were pounding on the missionaries. And if you don't, you know, get your numbers, the blood of the souls of those people that, you know, should have heard the message will be on you at the judgment bar of God. And I mean, there was people that, you know, really went home from that mission and had to get counseling and stuff from, you know, what I understand of talking to people.
Sure.
Big guilt trip. But now what had prepared me for that is that I was already used to not fitting in.
Right.
So,
Made you resilient.
I guess. I mean, I bought into it some, and I really wanted to be there because that was I felt like I had sacrificed who I was to give this a shot.
Right.
Nobody, I had no pressure to go. I mean, yeah, my parents really wanted me to go on a mission, of course, but I was not going to be made to feel guilty if I didn't. It was a choice that I made, and I was there to do the best job that I could. And if these crazy people were talking about, you know, I'm not going to make it to the celestial kingdom unless I hand out 10 books of Mormon this week. It was ridiculous. And I didn't buy into that. Not to say it wasn't hard because, you know, there's a lot of social pressure. But so anyways, I had a great experience as a missionary. It really changed me. And part of it was that I had decided I was going to totally jump into this thing and give it my all. And the other is I'd always been a real introvert, and that day in, day out, you know, having to talk to people that didn't want to talk about religion.
Yeah, got you out of your shell.
It's huge, got me out of my shell, huge growing experience. What a positive experience in my life. came back and it really set me in a great direction. And I'm really, you know, thankful for that experience that I had. After that, you know, got married. Of course, you know, a couple months after coming home from a mission, jumped right into having children like I was supposed to. You know, if you just have faith, everything's going to work out fine.
How'd you pick your wife?
I had known her at BYU. Okay. She was kind of an oddball like me and hung out in that same crowd. She started writing me when I was a missionary, kind of out of the blue. And we, you know, we wrote back and forth, and you know, later on decided we'd get married.
Right. Cool.
Jumped right into the full Mormon experience. You know, got married, started having kids. Realized I had no career, no way of supporting a family.
Oops. There's that.
I forgot about that. So, you know, started going back to school. That wasn't working out. I ended up joining the Army just because, you know, I could get college money, and it was way more, as sad as it is, being a private in the Army was way more money than working at the video game store in the shopping mall.
Right.
Joined the Army, and mission is a real conformist kind of environment where everybody's, you know, dresses the same. Is expected, or everybody assumes that everybody thinks the same and all this stuff. Jump into the Army, and it's like just like being a missionary again. And so it was another one of these things where, you know, I go to basic training, and now instead of the mission president yelling at us that, you know, we're all going to go to outer darkness for not, you know, keeping up the right numbers and doing everything right. Now I've got a drill sergeant cursing in my face, you know, telling me I'm a worthless nobody, blankety blank. And same sort of experience. There's like people all around me freaking out, but I think to myself, I didn't make the mistake of smiling and laughing at a drill sergeant, but I'm thinking in the back of my mind, like, you're nothing compared to a mission president.
Right.
telling me that my eternal salvation is like, I just got to make it to the end of the day.
Right.
Here. So spent a bunch of time in the Army, and while married in the Army, traveling around a lot, we were oftentimes inactive, kind of, you know, go to church sometimes. Spent a good deal of time sort of half in, half out of the church. And I guess the real point where I got involved in a lot of the stuff like Stay LDS and whatnot was about 2 years ago when the world just all of a sudden took a 90-degree turn. My wife and I had been married for 16 years. We had 6 children. I have always been the curious type, studying history and religion and all this kind of stuff. Very interested in all kinds of things, from sacred geometry to reading a Catholic catechism book. So I guess I was aware of a lot of stuff, not really having to deal with, you know, issues in the church that are really controversial, but also never quite feeling like I totally fit into church anyways, because I, you know, like I said, as a teenager, I was really not very involved in church and did a lot of stuff that, you know, is just counter to the culture and everything.
Sure.
I've had a couple family members that, you know, had issues with the church, and one in particular, me and my wife were both really close to, had decided to leave the church about, you know, a number of issues, and me and him, we talked a lot all the time. And he, you know, we had a really comfortable relationship talking, and he read, there's this one book, Under the Banner of Heaven by John Krakauer.
Sure. It's a toughie.
It's a tough book.
Yeah, it's a tough book.
Let me tell you.
That book made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
Literally, physically ill. I got physically ill reading that book.
I can believe it.
Yeah.
So he had read this book, and he wanted me to read it. And I know a lot of people think, oh, yeah, see, that's the trap. He's just trying to get me to leave the church. But he wanted me to read it because he just wanted an opinion from somebody, and he knew, like, I was somebody that could read the book. And
was this before or after your wife had had her struggle?
This is before that started.
Okay.
She has struggled on and off mildly. like I said, it was more like, yeah, you know, I just don't feel like being involved in church. And I had been the same way sometimes too. Not really kind of buying into having to do everything, and always being there and all that stuff. So anyways, she had already had some issues. I already had some issues, but this is something I've always been fascinated with. So me and him started talking, and my wife decided to also read this book, and that's, I think, was really kind of the, you know, the match, as in a match lighting a fire. You know, the match went to the tinder, and it just all burned up. It, within a couple of weeks, you know, she had just, you know, lost all desire to be a part. You know, she's just lost her faith.
Was it the polygamy? What was it?
Well, you know, I mean, she had known about some of that. She had read some other stuff about pioneer women that she had been interested in, and midwives, and, you know, in the pioneer days, and had come across stuff that, you know, just didn't really match up. You know, they would talk about some historical things. It wasn't the point of the book, but kind of new things didn't match up. I would say her big issues are, you know, the polygamy, polyandry issue, and, you know, it just, that really doesn't look very good for Joseph Smith at times, you know?
Right.
You know, the issue with the young girls and so many different, you know, women and the propositioning.
Right.
I think that, but also, you know, and I really picked up on this from talking to John Larson over at Mormon Expression. He said this on one of his podcasts. He said, there's two things that have to happen. You have to not like the church,
yep,
and you have to have doubts. If you only have one or the other, it's not going to fall apart.
That's right.
And you know what? I think that's very insightful.
It is. Yeah, it's true.
So she didn't like it. And then here's a big book full of all kinds of things to make you wonder, like, what in the heck is going on? And, you know, that book, the purpose is to paint religious people. And, yeah, I know he says he's not aiming at Mormons or anything, but religious people are one step away from mass murdering people if their leader says so. You know, that's kind of the whole issue of the book.
Are you saying you agree with that, or you're saying that's what he's saying?
I'm saying that that's what he's saying. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I understand how somebody can see that. I don't know. I don't want to get, you know, too much into analyzing that one book, but, you know, so this was like in 2007, our life made a dramatic change. You know, I was given it, well, I guess I wasn't always given it my all, to be honest, but, you know, I decided to follow down this path. I was going to be a good father, a good husband. I was going to do my best to support my family, all this stuff. And, you know, I'm involved in the LDS Church, which I feel nurtures that. You know, I associate with other men who have the same ideal to try and be good fathers and good husbands. And, you know, we're going to all be together and, you know, be together in heaven and all this stuff. That just came to an end. You know, my wife was so angry about everything, and she felt like she had been harmed by the church and tricked, and it was all a big fraud. And if I stay in the church, I am a part of, you know,
I'm complicit,
and not just in this general sense that. And I understand people get angry about this stuff, but we're not talking about just complicit in this general idea that the church harms the world. I'm harming her, my wife.
Yeah.
And if I don't leave, she's saying she doesn't think we can stay together. And how can I know so much about the church and ethically still stay and all this stuff? And
so were you trying to be the apologist and explain why polygamy wasn't so troublesome, or why polyandry shouldn't be so disturbing? Did, you know, or were you trying to nuance her faith and help her reach a new Fowler stage? Any of that?
Well, honestly, at the time, it was such a shock, you know, that I had no idea what to do. I had no idea who to turn to. I couldn't talk to my family, my normal support network. You know, I didn't even know if I couldn't talk to my parents, or there's nobody at church. There's nobody with the calling of what to, you know, what to do when your spouse freaks out. Calling. I knew most members of the church aren't comfortable with this stuff. So, at first, I'm thinking I'm just trying to keep it all together.
Right.
Our kids were going, you know, they went to early morning seminary. They went to the weekly activities. We most of the time went to church. They had this whole view of, you know, how life was. We were part of this whole thing. And, you know, now she's saying how evil the church is and we all have to leave and it's harming the kids. And I know it tore me up inside because I knew how much it hurt her and how angry she was. And the kids see this. They don't know what to do. And, you know, within the world of Mormonism, what happens when somebody stops believing? I mean, they're not going to be with you. You know, there's all this baggage, like, well, they're never going to see God again. This whole idea that we have to obey so we can once again see Heavenly Father.
Right.
Well, so what does it mean when you stop believing? Yeah. Does that mean that person's never going to see God again? They're not going to be with me in the afterlife. It was like this. We had a range of kids from, like, at that point, 16 down to about 4 years old.
Wow.
Older kids, I think they were processing it kind of somewhere in between, like, their mom had died or that we were getting a divorce.
Right.
You know, they just got really quiet and wouldn't talk to us and had no idea. It was just so tough, and I had nowhere to turn. I actually, I was surfing around the internet looking for anybody. There was some article by this guy. I wish I could remember his name now, but it had nothing to do with this subject. It was about a study of people taking antidepressants in Utah or something like that. At the end, in some of the footnotes, the guy who wrote it talked about how his wife had left the church, and I tracked this guy down just to find somebody, you know, say, "Hey, what did you do?" I have no idea what to do. So, yeah, I mean, I talked to him, and then I found this Faces East board totally by chance and got involved with them. But, you know, it's a tough struggle. And, as far as you asked the question about, you know, well, what did I do to try and fix that? Well, I don't know if that's, like, the best first response is to jump in and try and fix somebody.
Right.
I couldn't play the part of the apologist because I've never really been that traditional of a member of the church. I mean, I can't. That's not really my approach. And I guess I knew some of this stuff. My response was to dig in, and it's like, okay, well, I have really got to understand this stuff. So I started reading stuff online and buying all the books, you know, by Michael Quinn and Richard Bushman and Fawn Brody, and pouring through all that stuff, just because I had to know. I mean, this is something that's tearing my family apart and affecting me day in and day out, affecting my kids, all that stuff. So, yeah, I can't say I had any plan at first because it's not like I had gone, okay, well, when we're almost 40 years old, you know, life is going to fall apart, so let's have a plan in place that, you know, I'll be able to deal with this. And, I don't know.
So what kept you from reading Fawn Brody and Bushman, deciding too that you felt like it was a fraud and just checking out with your wife and taking the kids with you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there was a fundamental difference in my experience versus hers. I have had a positive, transformative experience in church. I've also had many, I hate to use the word mystical, but that's like the proper academic term. Mystic experiences of, you know, like that one thing I mentioned about deciding to go on a mission. Mm-hmm. I have always felt a connection or that there's the existence of something out there, the divine. To me, it's like a light or a sound that is kind of everywhere around. And if I just quiet myself, I can really feel this presence or I don't know. It's we would slap a label on it and call it God. I really don't know a whole lot in life, but I can't be honest with myself and say that I don't experience these things. Hmm. So I have this sense of the importance for me. Maybe it's just the way I'm made. That's the way God made me, is that I feel a sense of the religious and the spiritual, and it's important to me. It's part of who I am. And on top of it, within Mormonism, I gave it a shot, and it worked for me. Mm-hmm. I was a miserable person, and the thought of me giving up all that is, to me, going back to who I was. And for better or for worse, whether I actually accomplish all the ideals or not, I like how my practice of spirituality within Mormonism has transformed me. I mean, not to sound egotistical, but I kind of like the way I've become. I didn't like the way I was before. Mm-hmm. So that's, that's an emotional component that I think is extremely important in religion. Is, like we said, you have to like it on some level. And I like it. I like what it's done for me. I think it's a very good support network. I got to be honest. I mean, there's a lot of tough, controversial stuff in our history, and I totally understand why people have a problem with it. And that's not anti-Mormon stuff. That's stuff in our own history by our own historians, by people that lived it and experienced it.
Published by the church. Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to get at, and I know this makes some people a little crazy when I describe it this way. Like, it gets them upset in a way, but I've experienced enough things in my life that I thought were true and then found out that weren't and have to make the best of it, that when I found out that perhaps everything isn't perfect in the church, to me it was like, oh, well, that figures. Everything else is messed up. Why not that?
That's great.
But, I mean, some examples is, I lived as a young person, this very nice upper middle class life, and that should be perfect, right? I mean, I had a house and food and went to a nice school and all that stuff, but I was a miserable person. It didn't work, and I saw all kinds of miserable people around me. I went on a mission and dedicated to myself to that, but there were a lot of dysfunctional people in my mission, including some of the leadership. And I don't mean to bad talk them too much, because I honestly think most people are doing the best they can with what they have. But
right.
I didn't buy the line then either that, that was it. And then I joined the Army, and the Army has this ideal, we're going to be great and we're going to spread democracy throughout the world and we're going to make the world a better place and spread American ideals. And I don't want to sound too unpatriotic, because I really do love this country. And I did serve, but I was in an intelligence capacity and really saw like how things really worked. And there's a lot of dysfunctional people there too. Every place that I have gone has had a lot of good things about it and a lot of messed up things about it, and some inspiring people and some people that I honestly think were a little cuckoo or, just not everything that you would think they were. And so when I find out, the church isn't everything that I thought it was growing up, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
So, but the thing to me is to try and just see things as they are and deal with them as best I can. I mean, if I really let myself be the way I was before, like I said, when I was an unhappy person, I dwelled all the time on how messed up the world was. We're all going to die from a nuclear missile, and the economy is going to tank and whatever the problems are.
Right.
But that's a decision that I make is what I see around me is, and like I said, this, I don't know, what is around me, and this kind of goes back to like an esoteric kind of thought is that as within, so without; as above, so below.
Say it again slowly.
I can't even remember. It's a really old saying, and it comes from like medieval esoteric wisdom, but actually dates way back further than that. It's something from Hermetic literature. It's as within, so without; as above, so below. Meaning that, well, I mean, there's many meanings of it, but what you find in the world around you is a reflection of what's inside of you. And what is on the earth is sort of a mirror of what's in heaven. Or maybe in other words, what's also on a personal level, what's in your mind is what gets expressed in your body and your gut, you know, your mind being above and your body being below. Mm. But what this is getting at is there really is the world's not a black and white place. There's not all true or all false. And I would even argue there's not even shades of gray. There's actually this huge technicolor spectrum of possibilities. And what you see, what I see in the world around me is what I decide to see. I can see all the horrible things, and that can make me angry. And it's not to say that those things aren't there, but I can also choose to take a look at all the positive and beautiful things around me. And that's something that comes from within. And what it is that I want, sure enough, guess what? Everywhere around me is what I find. You know, if a lot of people that, and like I said, I totally understand this anger and the shock of finding out all this stuff is different. And there are messed up people in the church that will tell you the wrong things, and they should know better and say better and all that stuff. But, you know, if I found that as I develop love within myself, I find loving people around me. And if I'm angry, I find all kinds of reasons to be offended around me. Mm, right. Does that make any sense?
Sure, of course.
So,
but you would also agree that there's legitimate anger.
Oh, totally.
That there's anger that you actually have. Well, maybe a Buddhist Zen philosopher like the Dalai Lama would say all anger is controllable and a reflection of you. But there's reasonable anger that's absolutely not the responsibility of the person experiencing it too, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's nice to say all anger is your own fault, but that still doesn't eliminate the fact that it sucks. You know, I mean, we're going to feel that stuff. And I mean, I'll give you an example. I could be totally pissed off about the church. I went on this mission, and like I mentioned before, I dove right into having a family. I made decisions that on the surface of it would be very stupid financial decisions that put me back in my career many years. I have this huge family with in honestly, an economic environment is very difficult to have a big family, have a mother who stays at home, and have a home and the car and all this stuff. I could be really mad that, you know, I followed that. I listened to the church and I said, look, we're going to have kids and everything will turn out. And guess what? It hasn't really turned out. I mean, I can't complain. I've got a roof over my head and I've got plenty of food to eat, but
right.
I mean, I could be really angry about that. Mm-hmm. And I would have every reason to be.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, here's the part of deciding what to see is, do I decide that there are evil people out there that were trying to trick me? Yeah, I don't know. But what I see is there was a bunch of people doing the best that they thought, trying to teach me what they thought was right. I mean, like, my parents gave me most of these ideas. And they weren't out to get me. They don't want me to be miserable and to fail.
Right.
But they just didn't have information that was correct. But they really believed it, and they still believe it. And, you know, that works for them. They probably don't understand why it doesn't work for me, but it just doesn't, you know? So, you know, it's been a rough ride over the last couple of years. I understand that anger. There's there's stuff out there, but, you know, also a thing to me is, like I said, just to try and detach and see things as they are. And when I go to church on Sunday, I have yet to hear a lesson about blood atonement or racism. I'm not saying that nobody's ever made comments or anything, but all the things that are the hardest to swallow, the church has already moved away from, and is, even though they may be terrible at apologizing or talking about it or acknowledging it, in their own partially functional way, have moved away from all these issues. Like, if you don't want to practice polygamy, guess what? You can stay in the LDS church. I mean, in fact, if you do, you're going to get kicked out.
Right.
You know, I mean, if
even if you believe in it,
even if you believe in it, you know. So, I don't know. There are really tough issues out there, but I would say, look at what, you know, I look at what my experience is on Sunday. I look at what my experience is fulfilling a calling. The rest of the stuff is completely fascinating. I love it. I've always got a book or two, you know, on all these subjects that I'm in the middle of reading and studying and talking about. But the important thing to me is, what am I experiencing and seeing that as it is? And is it a positive effect in my life? Yes, for me it is.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you. Steps unto